Ron Van Dam. He doesn't need this gig. He's got all that money coming from that deposed Nigerian prince. Should be here any day now, and then he's kissing you suckers goodbye. You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's The Ron Van Dam Show.
Whatever.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Well, hi. Welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. I'm the one in the middle. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks for clicking on my avatar. I don't know where my avatar is. I think it's just above my coccyx, near my uvula. I'm so glad I'm not a doctor because I don't know anything about that stuff. I could have gone to medical school, but that would have meant I would have had to go to college that much longer, and no thank you. I could have been a lawyer. I could have been a contender. Whatever. Welcome to the program. Thanks for being here. You are going to actually get a very good rating now from my Uber account, which I don't have. I talked about this a few days ago in the program. I've never been in an Uber except I think I was tied, gagged, and handcuffed and brought to the Brooklyn Bridge. But no, that wasn't an Uber. That was something else. I've never done a bed and breakfast. I really haven't. I'm not even talking about an Airbnb and a B&O. I'm talking about bed and breakfast. I am not having breakfast in somebody else's house that I don't know. And they could poison all the guests. You know, I'm into that stuff. I stayed overnight at the Lizzie Borden house. I don't know what this has to do with anything that I'm talking about, but in Fall River, Massachusetts, a little sleepy town where everybody's walking around. They're very sleepy. They're very sleepy. Do you live in Fall River? Yes, I do. Is this a sleepy town? Oh, yeah. I'm very sleepy. Lizzie Borden, I don't know if you know history at all. It has nothing to do with Jesus, though. This has to do with the Lizzie Borden house. Lizzie Borden was a young girl, and apparently killed her parents by axing them to death. Not axing them any questions, just taking an axe and axing them up. And it's supposed to be a haunted place. Duh. And people claim that they hear Lizzie Borden's voice and they see all these ghosts and things. So what I did, back in those days, I was doing television. And we did a series on television called Realms of the Supernatural, where we would go to various haunted locations in the state of Massachusetts. I should call it the Commonwealth. Don't call it a state, Ron. It's Commonwealth. Okay, sorry. Went to about 7 locations with a camera crew. I was the executive producer. I went on all the shoots with them. Mike Lutton was my co-producer. And we went to the Johnstone Inn in Ashland, Massachusetts, I think is where that was. That was interesting. We went to a lot of haunted places. One of them was the Lizzie Borden House in Fall River, Massachusetts. And when we got there, we had a crew of about 4 people, 4 or 5 people. I can't remember. It was a long time ago. I mean, a long time ago. This was at the turn of the century.
Really, Ron? The turn of the century?
Yeah, around 2001. It wasn't that long ago. Anyway, so we spent the night in the Lizzie Borden house with the camera crew. And there was a representative from the Lizzie Borden house. I don't remember her name because it's of no consequence to anything. And she stayed there and gave us a tour of the house and answered all our questions. And we sat on the couch where Lizzie Borden's father, I believe he was, got chopped up into pieces right on the couch, blood all over the place, that kind of thing. And then we stayed overnight in the bedroom where Lizzie Borden hacked up her mother. Obviously, their relationship apparently was not working out. Lizzie Borden was charged with these murders, but it's kind of sketchy as to what happened to her. The question is, did she really commit these murders? The caretaker of the house and our tour guide said, no, she did not commit the murders. And we said, okay, well, then that's that. But we stayed in the rooms, and it was scary just because of the fact that it was supposed to be. But nothing happened. There were no ghosts. There were no strange creaky sounds. No one tapped me on the shoulder and threw up on my pants. There was nothing like that going on. As a matter of fact, most of the tour, except for Lizzie Borden's mother's hacked up, bodied bedroom, the rest of the house was just like, no big deal. That bedroom was a little creepy. Other than that, nothing happened. Do I believe in the supernatural? What the hell do you care? I keep my mind open. I love people that say that. And it's true, though. I mean, I like, you know, do you believe in UFOs, unidentified flying objects?
Well, I don't believe that they're coming from other planets, but I keep an open mind.
You keep your mind open, why don't you? You keep your mind open longer than my bank has hours, I'll tell you that. I went to the bank yesterday because I had to cash a check. I know. Millennials don't know what I'm talking about. Cashing a check? A check? What are you talking about? I don't even understand who you are. I had some place in the mail. It was a rebate or a hobate or a hoedown or something. I have no idea. It was a check for $200. And these days, a check for $200 to some people, whoa, that's pretty good. To other people, it's like, seriously? So I went to the bank, and this was on Thursday, and I got there at like 4:15, and the bank was closed, and I had a tirade. It wasn't a tirade. Actually, I was just a little disappointed. Perhaps I exaggerate when I say a tirade. I was a bit disappointed, and I went to open the door to the bank, and it wouldn't open. And I thought, well, maybe I'm pulling on the door incorrectly. It's a bank. It's 4:15 in the afternoon. How can a major bank not be open? But it wasn't, because they had their hours printed on the glass door, and they closed at 4:00. I get there like at 4:10 or something like that. I was a little bit upset, and I felt like eating a gallon of ice cream. It doesn't take much for me to feel like I feel like eating a gallon of ice cream. It's rather anything will prompt that. But I don't eat a gallon of ice cream because that would be deadly. So I don't do it. Anyway, everything that I've talked about up until this point is of no consequence to you whatsoever. And I don't know why you even bother. It just doesn't make any sense. I'll tell you what does make sense. We are a couple of weeks away from the beginning of public school in most towns and cities across the United States. In some towns and cities, they start in the middle of August, which is basically cruel, both to teachers and to students. Enough with the school stuff, you know. Isn't it amazing that during the school year they have to accomplish a certain number of school days, otherwise the school year's extended into June further or whatever, but you have to by state law, you have to, school has to be open a certain number of days, otherwise it's extended. And to this, it's kind of like, who made this up? What? Do you mean to tell me that if there are like snow days or storms or something and you miss like 3 or 4 days that you have to make them up? For what? What can you not teach a little faster? Yeah, we were gonna spend 5 days talking about the Civil War. Do it in three. I'm going to make a statement that most people are going to hate me for, and others will love me. But that's what life is. And that's what doing a talk show is all about as well. I don't believe the public schools serve much of anything other than babysitting your child for most of the day. I'm sorry I said that. And I'm not putting teachers down, and I'm not putting students down, and I'm not putting the school system down. I'm just saying, to me, it appears like that's the major function. And it should be. If you're paying your tax dollars, which is a lot, both in property taxes and income taxes, the least they can do is watch your kids for a number of hours during like 9 months of the year. I think that is proper. And that's basically what it is. Well, Ron, that's a horrible thing to say. Okay, like, I know. What they do is they throw in some education just to make it look authentic. Now, I know teachers stand in front of the classrooms and they talk and they teach and they talk and they teach, and kids benefit from their knowledge, and I get that. But I think it's a byproduct. I think some teachers will actually say to you, Ron is right. We're supposed to be teaching, but we end up just being babysitters for your kids. I think some teachers actually believe that, especially in the classes where the kids are, oh, let's say, a bit unruly and difficult to deal with. I'm sorry I made the statement to many people that may find this to be offensive. But break it on down, I think you'll find that's basically the case. And is it wrong? Oh, God, no. Oh, God, no. If someone's going to watch your kids all afternoon, all morning and afternoon, yeah, throw some knowledge into it. Of course, my God, why not? So, yeah, does it serve a purpose? I don't know. Let's be honest, everybody. Let's be honest. Let's talk about this. Let's be honest. How much of what you learned in school did you retain? Uh-huh, right, that's what I thought. Yeah, you picked up some knowledge. Yeah, you maybe found yourself in what might have interested you for the rest of your life, you know, that kind of thing. But I'm telling you, most of what you learned, not a lot. Well, let me ask you something. Where did you get most of your education from? Oh, experiences. I see. Experiences. Sometimes your parents taught you stuff. Oh, I'm sorry, your parent taught you stuff. Or your friends did. Or your acquaintances or other kids. But sitting in a classroom listening to somebody talk for an hour or so, not so much, not so much. If it was a subject you were really interested in, you might have paid attention. But if you weren't that interested in the subject, you were watching that clock and looking out the window. I know you were. I know you were. Don't kid me. Unless you were an extraordinary student. But there wasn't a lot of those, and there aren't. No, we know the real purpose of public schools. Let's not kid ourselves. Public schools, and even more so colleges, what purpose do they really serve that is really beneficial? It's socializing you. It's socializing kids. Yeah, when you get home from school, when you're younger, yeah, you play with your friends, that kind of thing. Not so much. But then when you go to high school and you go to college, these experiences with these other people are more significant. You start dating, you start, being passionately following somebody with lust. You go to various places, you do some semi-adult things, you start driving a little bit, that kind of thing. So, that's the consequential time of life. That's where you pick up your experiences. Sitting in a classroom in a chair all day is not chunk full of experiences. It's the opposite. So I make these claims unto you. I don't know if you agree with me or not. It's not the point. That's not why I'm here. Many, many parents are very happy that school is starting again for the very reason that I've outlined in my thesis. They are happy to get rid of their kids for most of the day. Now, don't get me wrong. We don't love our kids. That's not true. We love our kids. We worry about them. We make sure that they're being educated properly because that's part of the deal. But still, you know, bottom line, they're gone for most of the day. That's your bottom line, and you know it. Stop arguing with me about that. That's it. It's good for kids to be separated from their parents. It's good because, I mean, you shouldn't be that connected with them. They should be there for you, support you, live in the same house with you, teach you stuff. But all day, no. And then, of course, came the pandemic thing. Remember that? I know that was like years and years and years ago. Do you remember the pandemic where kids had to be taught at home? The stress wasn't the pandemic and the fact that you could die any minute. It was having the kids home all day. That's when you realized, you know, at first it was nice. Now it's driving me crazy. That's my impression of a young lady speaking, by the way. Both the kids and the parents were grating on each other's nerves after a few weeks of this staying at home thing. So there's a great deep appreciation now for get them out of the house and send them to public school. My God, thank God we're back to that. And that's what the school year is. I know. You parents that are, you know, members of the PTA, the Parent Teachers Association of America, thank you for your service. I know you're really into it, man, and you're not listening to a word I say because you're into that stuff. But you're not the mainstream. You are the people that are with the PTA because the other parents didn't want to be. That's all. Look, kids are wonderful as long as they're not talking too much and don't scream and yell and become too much of a burden. Otherwise, they're very, very good. We all love our children. Our children can do no wrong. Even if they are like horrible children, they're still they're a wonderful, gentle soul inside, right? So we all love our kids. There's no question about it. But you've got to admit to me, a little separation every once in a while is good for them. And it's good for you. And it's good for everybody. And that's where public schools come in. Some people send their kids to private schools. Ooh, I don't know why. I guess they're scared of their kids assimilating into regular society for some reason. I don't know why. You may have sent your kids to private school and you had your reasons. I don't know why you wasted your money, but whatever. Because this is what you're paying the taxes for. For the public schools. That's the brunt of it. All right. I do have a guest today who has written kind of an interesting book, not on this subject matter, though. We're going to be talking about vampires. This is a book that was written, and you might say to yourself, oh, no, not another vampire book. That's the title of her book. So she's kind of like self-doing it to herself. She's an interesting author, and we'll be speaking to her momentarily. But before we do that, kids, I call you kids. You probably are younger than I am, but that's not why I called you kids. That was an expression of fondness, I suppose. I don't know. I don't know what it was. Anyway, this short commercial break, and then when we come back, more of what we were.
Let's be honest. You are socially awkward. You've no idea how to start a polite conversation. You wouldn't know what to do or say if you stumbled into one. And when it comes to talking with members of the opposite sex, you're like a sixth grade wallflower at the school dance. You need help, and you know it. You need me. Thompson St. Thomas, Fancy Bastard. For a courteous, pre-arranged fee, I am now offering wingman services for both men and women. Even if you've got the vocabulary range of a brain-damaged gibbon, with me at your side explaining to people what you rarely meant to say, every drool-drenched bit of drivel that slobs out of your scone hole will sound witty, erudite, and confident. And ladies, don't be shy. Take my arm and we'll go chat with the gent across the room with whom you've been exchanging glances all evening. Don't worry, he won't be intimidated by my extraordinary good looks. I guarantee he will only see me as your good British friend who happens to be incredibly gay. It's a service only I can provide, because I am Thompson St. Thomas, Fancy Bastard. So do let me know where we'll be going next, you and I.
Diane Hunter joins us now. She's an author. Very interesting book called Oh Great, Another Vampire Book. First of all, I love the title. That's nice.
Thanks so much. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
That's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. What part of the country do you hail from?
I am outside of Boston.
Oh, wave to me. Let me see if I can see you.
I'm waving right now.
Oh, okay. I guess not. All right. yeah, we're outside of Boston as well, so there you go. Okay. What prompted you to write this book, which isn't really a vampire book indeed? It's kind of cloaked in social commentary, I believe. Am I accurate?
You are accurate, and it is amazing to be talking about it on the radio, being media, because a lot of the book is about making fun of media, or rather commenting on it. Mm-hmm. I wrote this book. It was about 2018. I'm going through a divorce, and I'm sitting in Starbucks on weekends drinking coffee.
Yeah.
And at the time, as you can recall, in 2018, on media and social media,
yes,
there seemed to be more of a cultural divide going on.
Yes,
there and was. Things yes. were getting really wacky. Mm-hmm. So it was a combination of wanting to discuss that. And also, I was just sitting in the coffee shop, and I was thinking about my favorite graphic novel by Alan Moore called The Watchmen. Have you ever read that one?
No, I haven't. Not me.
Oh, well, it has the main character, Dr. Manhattan. He's a gigantic blue man who essentially is able to change all metaphysical laws.
Mm-hmm.
So he becomes somewhat of a god figure. Like, he can float in the air.
Mm-hmm.
He can change the atomic structure of anything. And so I thought, just being a writer, what if something like that happened again? What if there was a new god? And then I thought, well, if there was, mm-hmm. I wonder how media would react to it. And then my next thought naturally was, oh, and what if there were also vampires? I mean, that's just a natural chain
yes.
of thinking.
Yes.
It's a typical writer's thing to do, a string of what ifs.
Yeah.
You know, keep in mind it's 5:00 in the morning and I'm sitting in Starbucks, so that's what happens.
I see. Well, thank God you weren't drinking. I mean, alcohol, it would have been a different book, perhaps.
That is true.
Yeah.
The drinks at Starbucks really aren't very good, though. The alcoholic ones.
You're socially not even into that. Okay. You know, back then in the year that you sat down and did this, things were in incredible upheaval all over the place, socially, politically, the whole bit.
Yeah, it's great that things are completely calm now.
Yeah, now. Nothing changed, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so your book will live on in infamy, probably. Probably in 20 years, people go, yeah, this is still relevant. This is sure. She wrote this yesterday, right? It's probably going to
yeah.
be, yeah. I guess the term that I see that you've used are culture wars, which seems to filter into everything these days. Is that where it all started?
Yes. I think that there's been an uptick in what people call woke politics or wokeism, yes. cancer culture. You know, these are things that I talk about in the book. I address things like freedom of speech, how capital punishment should be handled,
mm-hmm.
sustainability for the environment. And that was really the whole point of including vampires, because... Yeah. As you mentioned, it's not really a book about vampires. Rather, I use them as a vehicle just to discuss mm-hmm. history. And mm-hmm. since vampires are around so long, sustainability is obviously mm-hmm. something that's important to them.
Right.
And well, it's just such a joy to write. It was so fun just to make fun of things.
It's a book of satire, actually, that comments on our society, which is very easy to comment upon these days. But you kind of like have this satirical, comical background kind of thing going on.
I love comedians. I always have. Ever since I was a little kid, I remember watching Milton Berle on TV. Mm-hmm. You know, and I love Woody Allen, Mel Brooks, yeah. Judd Apatow, Jackie Mason, of course, mm-hmm. Eddie Murphy. You know, I just love comedy, and this was just a great opportunity to write about comedy without actually having to do stand-up comedy, mm-hmm. which I think was probably a lot more intimidating than writing about it.
Yes, it is. I did that for a while, and it is. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So you get it.
Yeah, I do. It's an interesting book in every sense of the word, and then to go the vampire route, because even that that took over society for the longest time with TV shows and all the novels and novellas, as you said, that was also a part of like just getting to it's like binge watching or getting involved too much. Was that part of the vampire thing?
Yeah, I wanted to write about vampires because I actually don't even like vampire books mm-hmm. that much. I'm not a huge fan. Like, I've read a few. Yeah. I really like Anne Rice's Interview with a Vampire. Mm-hmm. But I make fun of vampire literature in the book. Like, for example, the fact that they are sparkly and that in media they seem to be always good-looking. Yeah. You know, it's just kind of funny. Like, you never hear about, like, some fat schlubby vampire who has to pay rent and has a crappy job, right,
true.
For millennia.
That's true. They only want to suck blood, it seems. Yeah. where does this actually occur? Is it at a point in history? Did you go there? Where are we there as far as generation is concerned?
The book takes place in 2018, and the main character is a woman named Sarah Fielding. Mm-hmm. She's 19, and she studies journalism mm-hmm. at Boston University.
Oh,
so
oh.
There's my in with talking about media there.
Well, this is actually feasible.
Yeah. So as far as like the historical aspects go, there are various vampires in it that, of course, are from different parts of history. Mm-hmm. And so I get to talk about them. Like, for example, one of them is named Larry, uh-huh. and he's from the classical age of ancient Greece. And he happened to be best friends with Epicurus, uh-huh. the philosopher. So, you know, one of Epicurus's main ideas was free speech. And so that factors into what was going on at the time.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
He's also a fat vampire who has an eating disorder.
Oh, okay.
So there's my fucking fun at all vampires being good-looking.
Man. Oh, my God. This isn't your first rodeo, as I understand it.
No, I have written other books, mm-hmm. and you can see all my books on my website, Diane Hunter Author. .com.
Great.
And there's links for everything that I've written.
Cool.
And yeah, I recommend that everyone buy these books if they want to be cool.
Yeah, that definitely would put you into the cool grouping, and it is
one of
the reasons to buy the book. The other is that it's a damn good book, but you also want to be cool. You also want to be cool.
Yeah, I think it's very timely. I like to think of it as a book of our times. Yeah. You know, just talking about the things that are bandied about nowadays, like toxic masculinity, which I actually make fun of as toxic femininity, and white privilege, you know, the use of gender pronouns.
Wow. You're hitting everything here.
Oh, yeah. I'm all over the place.
You're all over the place.
It was a lot of fun to write from different points of view of media, like CNN versus Fox, Breitbart, uh-huh. New York Times, you know, just how would these outlets react to a new god. You know, Sarah Fielding, my college student who studies journalism, she essentially becomes a new god.
So essentially,
you know, there's a lot of misogyny that comes in too.
Well, yeah. Unfortunately, not everybody's going to look at everything the same way anymore.
Which is why I make fun of everyone.
Yeah, well, you have to. And then that person always thinks you're making fun of the other one, but no, I'm making fun of you. also.
Yes, I tried to be fair and balanced about it, you know, to borrow a term from Fox.
Yes, I was just going to say.
Because I'm not an ideologue. I really do make fun of everyone. People on the right, people on the left, you know, reference people like Tucker Carlson. I do poke fun a little bit at Tucker Carlson. I do write a scene where Sarah makes him throw up on live TV.
I got to read this book.
But I'm somewhat of a Tucker apologist, though. He's not a bad guy.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, he's not a bad guy. He's like every other human being. He has his good points and his bad points.
He's just using a vehicle to get to the top, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah,
the agenda
exactly.
That's given to him.
Yep.
Which he's at odds with.
Really, you think so? Do you know him?
Yeah. That's kind of how I see Tucker, because I think that, oddly, even though he is associated with being conservative, I think that Tucker is someone that comes up in the media every now and then as having an unpopular position on things. Recently, he talked about UFOs. You might find that interesting.
Yeah, somewhat. Yeah,
because a lot of people aren't bringing that up.
No, I mean, you know, that's all. Well, see, that's like, it's a godlike kind of situation. Something that's beyond our level showing up, if that's the case, and already we're getting different responses.
So that'll be the next book.
Okay.
For sure.
And that was going to be my next question, because every time I have an author on the program, I always say, what's next? What are you working on next?
Oh, so this book, Oh Great, Another Vampire Book, is part of a satirical series. I'm calling it the Oh Great series. So next is Oh Great, Another Book About Jesus. You know, after that, it's probably Oh Great, a superhero book. So the point is that I'm having fun with different genres.
That's
and
wonderful.
Making fun of, kind of respectfully having fun with different genres, not so much making fun.
Right. No, I get it.
Yeah. Just as a lens to write about all the things that I want to talk about.
Yeah.
So because I'm an introverted writer who doesn't get out much.
So you are like a comedian where there's a line, and if you cross it, you got to be a little bit more careful, but you can still cross it. And
the way to get the comedy out without having to leave the house.
Exactly. And have people throw things at you.
Because I have three little boys. I'm a mom, essentially. Yeah, that's the main thing.
Okay.
I have like three little boys.
All right. Well, congratulations there.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah.
I hope that people like the book, and they can go to DianeHunterAuthor.com for links to buy and to also read blogs where I write stuff about the ideas in the book.
Oh, the blogs are there as well, right?
Yes, I do blog.
Okay. Well, one more time, the book is called Oh Great, Another Vampire Book. I think you can remember that title. And one more time, Diane, the website.
DianeHunterAuthor.com.
Perfect. Hey, it's a pleasure speaking to you. I'm looking forward to the next book, and maybe we'll talk to you then. Well, all right. That'll do it for me today. I'll be back again next weekday that rolls around, which could be rather soon. Get a calendar out. Figure it out for yourself. But until that time arrives, I wish you peace.